case number 14-1034. Yatish Joshi, and individually as executor of the estate of Georgina Joshi and member of Yatish Air LLC petitioner versus National Transportation Safety Board et al. Mr. Casey for the petitioner, Mr. Scherer for the respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This case is about whether the most important activities taken by the NTSB, that is, investigating fatal airplane crashes and determining the facts of probable cause of those crashes, are reviewable ever by anyone. Respondents, largely based on a Ninth Circuit case that has never been cited by any court in any jurisdiction for anything, say that their actions are not reviewable. Petitioner disagrees. Petitioner's position is that if Section 1153 means anything, it means that a person with a substantial interest in an order such as the NTSB issued has the ability to seek judicial review.
Is that the question, or is the question whether it's a final order? And we have standards for that. Let's put the Ninth Circuit case to one side.
Sure.
We have standards for that, right? And one of the things that we require is that there be some legal consequences from this. So what are the legal consequences that flow from this order?
There are any number of...
It can't be used in a civil proceeding for damages, right?
It can't
be submitted to evidence. Okay. So what legal consequences flow from this report?
Well, any number one, but just so we are very clear, that is not at all what we are doing, we have any intention of doing. This is not a precursor to any kind of civil litigation. It's not related.
No, that was just illustrative of the limited use of this,
right,
and whether it is a final order.
Well, it is a final order because number one is final, meaning that it is the consummation of the agency's decision making process. Okay, they have no intention or no they've made no. Bones about the fact they're not continuing to investigate this. There's nothing else that they're going to do. As a matter of fact, under their regulations with respect to petitions for reconsideration, once we file the petition for reconsideration, the grounds that we have raised in that petition for reconsideration can't be re-raised. So there is no later time where we can raise this again. There's no, according to them, later venue in which we can actually seek judicial review of this. They're saying there is no point at which this is sufficiently final in terms of being their last word, such that it ultimately gives rise to judicial review. As for your question about the rights and obligations, you'll notice that Section 831.4 in their regs specifically says that this is a fact-finding investigation that is not made for the purpose of determining legal rights and obligations. As I'm sure you understand, just because they don't have the purpose of it doesn't necessarily mean that it has no effect.
So what are the legal consequences?
Well,
what rights and obligations have been adjusted?
Any number of things. Number one, Georgina Joshi is identified on the NTSB's aviation database as being the sole cause of the deaths of five people. Okay, it's been up there since 2006. To the world, that is an educational tool that the aviation community uses to understand why accidents happen and who caused them. And the NTSB is broadcasting to the world that Georgina caused them and only Georgina caused them. That is a harm that...
Now, what are the legal consequences that flow from that? What rights and obligations have changed?
Both the estate and the father of the estate and the company that owned the airplane have the right not to be wrongfully accused of being
the best by people. So that's a reputational harm, you're saying?
It is some manner of reputational harm, sure. And this court and others have said that reputational injury is certainly sufficient to confer Article III standing.
So any time an agency does something that could have reputational harm, you think that makes it a final order?
What you're asking is
identifying the legal consequences. It's not just that it has to be final. It's just the consummation of agency process.
Absolutely.
It has to have legal consequences. And you identified reputational harm.
Well, reputational injury is one. Financial injury is another.
What's the financial?
Well, we had to do the job.
That's practical consequences of your
answer. It is a simply practical concept. We are out north of $1 million in terms of doing the investigation that the NTSB did. This court, as a matter of fact, I believe Judge Edwards in Americans for Safe Access talked about $140 in copays being sufficient injury in order to merit a review of HHS's decision to how to classify medical marijuana.
But that's a very different situation. Litigation call, preparing to litigate and doing an investigation. The Supreme Court has said that's not sufficient.
No, what they have
made
said.
Made that clear in Steele Co. and other cases.
What they have said, Your Honor, is that the cost of litigating aren't necessarily.
Well, the cost of preparing yourself to whatever. It is that you decide to go out and pursue an investigation that no one is obliged or required you to do.
It's not
sufficient. I mean, at least my reading of Steele Co. and what its meaning to suggest clearly says that. You can't then come in and say, well, I unilaterally decided to pursue this investigation that no one required me to do, and I spent a lot of money, and therefore here I am.
The veteran in Americans for Safe Access unilaterally spent $140 in copays because HHS scheduled medical marijuana. And therefore he couldn't get it.
But his claim was that he was entitled to get that benefit from the agency.
We are entitled, the airplane community, and in particular the people that are flying the planes that are subject to the investigations, are entitled to an accurate and complete investigation. That's what Section 1131 states. Congress obliges the NTSB to conduct investigations and identify the facts and probable causes of those accidents.
So you see, under your theory, what you're saying is not just with this agency, any agency that puts together information and files it is subject to review because when they say we're done, anyone who's distressed with whatever the investigation or review or whatever it was can come in and require us to review it. And what are the standards of review? What are we going to review?
Well,
does it start in district court and you create a new record? Does it come to the Court of Appeals? And what are we reviewing?
Section 1153 vests exclusive jurisdiction in the Court of Appeals.
I know, but what are we reviewing is what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense. What are we reviewing? The agency says, you know, we've looked around. We've done the best we could. This is what our investigation has, and we filed it. No, there are no consequences that flow to anyone. No one's required to do anything. We're not intending to hurt anyone. This is what we did. And there are agencies that do this all the time.
I understand there's agencies that do this.
And they get it wrong all the time.
And if there are no legal consequences, we shrug our shoulders and say that's unfortunate.
I can't imagine
we review all such matters.
There are consequences that flow to the petitioner. As I said, the reputational harm, the financial harm, the procedural injury there. He has a right to have it done the right way. Informational injury, he is a member of the flying community that still flies into that airport.
You know what your reputational harm would be? Is if we really had review powers and we say, we've looked at it, there's no reason for us to overturn what the agency's done. Now we've confirmed it for the world and put it in Fed Third, and there it is. And then the so-called reputational harm that you're worried about would really exist.
Well,
whereas now it's just something in a file and the agency's not accusing anyone.
It is in no way something in a file. It is on their database. It takes 3 clicks on their database to identify that Georgina Joshi killed 5 people. That is the reality, that reputational harm. We're not talking about court action here. We're talking about from standing purposes, the identifiable trifle that's necessary to confer standing. And certainly the...
And assuming we have review authority, you would say what? The standard review is substantial evidence?
Absolutely. It's arbitrary and capricious and substantial evidence, just like any other review of any type of administrative agency action. And the court is well equipped to do that. The court all the time reviews the record compiled by an administrative agency to determine whether the facts that they have found...
We do that in adjudicatory proceedings where there are parties that put together a record, they're contending parties, they're adversaries, and it makes some sense to review in that setting under substantial evidence. All you have here is an agency is required by Congress to make a record of something that happened. It's not an adjudicatory procedure.
It isn't limited to adjudicatory procedures. It's anything that is a final order goes well beyond adjudications. Anything that is a final disposition, whether positive or negative, affirmative or declaratory, adjunctive, that ends a matter is an order.
Do you have any authority supporting this?
That's 5 U.S.C. 551.6.
No case authority, because if you're right, one would expect to find it pretty easily.
In terms of, there are any number of intermediate decisions in the course of an NTSB investigation that courts have deemed to be final and easily susceptible to judicial review. The Tenth Circuit in Burnett, the Ninth Circuit in Graham, the District Court or the D.C. Circuit in Creed said in all of those instances, for example, the decision to publish the truckers' medical records on their website, that was a final order from the district court's perspective and carried sufficient consequences to merit review.
What court of appeals has issued an opinion that's consistent with your position here?
I would say that the Tenth Circuit in Burnett and the Ninth Circuit in Graham each said that intermediate decisions, in both those decisions, those were the decisions not to permit a family of a victim to participate in the teardown of an engine after an accident. Those were decisions that were final orders and susceptible to judicial review.
I'm surprised you didn't mention the Tozzi case.
Well,
there's a report finding that something may cause cancer.
Absolutely. That's another instance. That's a little...
just a report.
That's this court from a couple years ago. That's a little bit, that's not in the NTSB context. I was trying to answer Judge Edwards' question in the NTSB context. Excuse me. But certainly, Tozzi was a situation where maybe it was HHS again, deemed that dioxin was a carcinogen, and they published that. And a manufacturer comes in and says, hey, that's going to, harm the reputation of dioxin, which I make, and I'm going to lose money. And the court found that that was perfectly adequate to constitute final agency action. It was just a report. It didn't have any substantive consequences. Along those lines, the FAA issues hazard, no hazard letters all the time, which are deemed to be technical in nature, advisory in nature, having no legal enforceable effect. But what they do is they cause or at least encourage other people to do other things, which had the NTSB done its investigation properly, they would have been obligated to come up with safety recommendations, which the FAA then is obligated to consider and implement to the extent possible. As in Bennett versus Speer, that's the exact same type of scenario that is deemed to be final agency action. The Supreme Court said that in Bennett. It was a fish take report with respect to that the Fish and Wildlife Service issued. And the Fish and Wildlife, on its own, it doesn't do anything. But then the Bureau of Land Management, oftentimes looks to those types of things in terms of determining what to do about a dam, which then leads to, a petitioner saying, hey, I get hurt by the amount of water that I can use.
These are interested parties. I mean, it's like Burnett. Burnett had a regulation which said certain parties are entitled to participate in an investigation. The person within that category was excluded. Of course that kind of person can raise a challenge because the agency has a regulation and the regulation was violated.
Absolutely.
There's nothing here that says, in fact, the regulation here says the opposite, that we're not meaning to produce anything.
Well, Your Honor,
all the examples you gave, aren't they their reports that were being made for an agency action?
Right.
That was going to determine that was going to determine rights and obligations. Whereas here, the purpose of this and the, what it, how it's used, it's just a report.
It isn't. It's not going to be used. In the ordinary course, what is supposed to...
It's not going to be used by the agency to adjudicate rights and obligations. Is
no.
that correct?
What is, in the ordinary course, the whole purpose of the probable cause report is to then come up with safety recommendations that you give to the FAA, and the FAA goes and does it. It's precisely the same thing. But it can't be that because they didn't do their job, they're therefore insulated from judicial review. And so what we have here is a situation where the folks that continue to fly into Bloomington, nothing has changed. So to the extent there were problems endemic to Bloomington, by the way, of which my client is one, if there are problems endemic to Bloomington or the air traffic controllers in general in that area, they're still there.
Is there a single, I want to make sure I understand your answer, because I will read it again if you have an answer. Is there a single Court of Appeals or Supreme Court case that has said the end result of the investigation, that report, is subject to judicial review? Burnett does not say that.
No. There is not. The only decision that has said that it isn't subject to judicial review is Gibson, and Gibson is wrong for any number of the reasons we said in the brief.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It seemed to me all the cases that you were citing were cases where the report was taken and then used by an agency to adjudicate decision. Whereas in this case, we have a report was made, and then the regulations say it can't be used for anything other than correcting problems at the airport.
No, it's actually the reverse. The only thing the regulation says, and I'm sure agencies would love to draft their own regulations that insulate themselves from judicial review. That's not what operates. It's 1153. But there are...
Agencies can promulgate certain kinds of regulations that insulate themselves from review. For example, procedural requirements beyond what the statute says or the APA requires. The agency can go there or not. And if they don't go as far as you would prefer, we don't have any review under Vermont Yankee. Agencies do all kinds of regulations that effectively limit what we can review.
Understood, but you begin by looking at the statute, which is 1153A,
right.
Which says that any person that discloses a substantial interest in the final order has the right to petition for review. And, you know, we are clearly a person that has...
Well, you're assuming something about final order, so that's the problem.
I believe we have demonstrated that there's both the consummation of agency decision-making and their rights and liabilities, and has altered the legal...
You didn't ask for any rebuttal time, but I'm presuming you'd like some.
I would love some rebuttal time.
We'll give you about 2 minutes.
Thank you so much.
Great, thank you.
May it please the Court, my name is Howard Scher. I represent the FAA and the NTSB in this matter. To start with your first question, Judge Griffith, about final order, we don't even think this is an order, because it doesn't fix any legal consequences, change any relationship, or impose an obligation. And I think that's where the Gibson Court went in its decision in the Ninth Circuit. And furthermore, Gibson was a case exactly like this when in its posture, where there was a petition for reconsideration many years after the original incident, and the Court found in that case that both the denial of the reconsideration, or I should say neither the denial of the reconsideration nor the original probable cause determination was an order, or and certainly not a final order, and it's not subject to review and dismissed for lack of jurisdiction.
Can you focus on just the petition for reconsideration issue as to why that is not a reviewable final agency order, but just the fact that you denied reconsideration? I know they want to get behind the order, but it seems to me that commonly when agencies deny reconsideration, that is an order, a final order of the agency. It has a legal consequence of refusing to reconsider or reopen something.
So it doesn't have a real legal consequence any more than the original probable cause determination, because all it's doing is saying effectively in this case, we are not going to reconsider our original probable cause determination. And I don't see... And Gibson said the same thing. You can't make yourself better by simply filing a petition for reconsideration, then getting a decision, and then somehow getting something more reviewable than the original probable cause determination.
Well, you may not be able to get, so, I mean, there's a separate question of whether that lets you leapfrog back to the original order, but imagine if the agency just had an entirely arbitrary rule for whether it would grant or deny petitions for reconsideration. We'll throw it up in the air. If it lands on this side of the line, we grant. This side, we deny. Would that not be a final order that would be reviewable?
So Gibson didn't...
Just the denial.
I want to answer it this way. In Gibson, the concluding paragraph was that it's not reviewable, period, because it's not an order. But if you were to ask me to choose Plan B, fallback position, I would say...
Well, just explain to me, other than saying that's what the Ninth Circuit said, as a matter of logic, why under the Administrative Procedure Act generally, or this statute in particular, the order denying reconsideration is not itself a final order, putting aside how far back it lets them look.
Because, in fact, it doesn't fix any legal obligations.
It's denied them reconsideration.
Yes, and that's all.
The regulations say you can file a petition, and we said you couldn't do it. Just like it, DHS denies an alien's application for reconsideration of an immigration decision.
But then there's the secondary effect of then that person has lost a right, or it has
fixed
a right.
Well, they already lost it in the prior order. They just didn't reopen or reconsider when I asked them to.
Right, so the original decision regarding whatever fixing of legal rights is then still in effect in your hypothetical, which doesn't exist here because the original probable cause determination fixed no legal rights or ended with any legal consequences on Mr. Joshi.
How would petition the if they just thought you were arbitrary in how you denied petitions for reconsideration, what is the standard of review? I assume it's incredibly deferential. Or would you say it's entirely committed to agency discretion whether you want to reconsider one of these things?
Yes, I think it is committed to agency discretion. I know this Court has had a line of cases in which you talk about failure to follow procedures. But I think, as Judge Edgeworth says in Chiron, this is a unique situation. This agency performs a unique set of circumstances. It's independent, and its duty is to investigate plane, in this case, airplane accidents, determine the probable cause, but not fix any legal rights or responsibilities or obligations. And the idea is, if recommendations are appropriate, they weren't in this case, to make recommendations both to the industry or person who owned the airplane, the person who manufactures the engine, or to the FAA, recommendations, and we do in appropriate cases. And about 82% of the time right now, those recommendations are complied with.
But don't your regulations allow a petition for reconsideration?
They do.
Okay, so I mean, that's the little bit of weird piece in this case. It's a procedural right that the agency is given. The statute doesn't necessarily require, as far as I can tell. So the question is, if you've given a procedural right, do they not have her, and you say, no, we're not going to allow it. That doesn't mean you're wrong. The question is, do they have a right to challenge that? Because at least with respect to the right that you've given, which you didn't have to give, the right to petition for reconsideration, you deny it. That might be reviewable, and that certainly would be a very deferential standard of review. And it does not mean that the final product is otherwise reviewable. It might only mean that if someone wants to challenge your denial of petition for reconsideration, they might be able to. You can't go any further.
So let me answer again, starting with Gibson. Gibson, I think, addresses that very clearly at the end and says, no, it would not be
reviewable. Yeah, but the question is why?
And then, well, I think because of what it said about the legal consequences part of the equation. That is to say, no matter how you slice it, there is no determination other than a probable cause determination.
No, the right that's being asserted in the petition for reconsideration is I want to ask you to look at this again. And the agency has said, you have that right. You can ask us to look at it again. You have something concrete. We're giving it to you. And you deny it. You say no. That doesn't mean that you lose. But can someone not come in and say, they said I have a right to petition for reconsideration, so they have to consider it reasonably. They didn't, and then we go to the standard of review. You would argue it's very deferential. We deny it. And that your argument would then be, as I understand you, that's it. It's over. They can't challenge the original decision that they wanted reconsideration on. You know, they got the review on the denial of reconsideration. That's it.
If you're suggesting that that's all there is to it, that did they get their review on reconsideration, As a fallback position, I would agree with that, Your Honor, and I think Barnhart versus Levine, a case we did not cite, but in anticipation of a question like that, which involved the Office of Special Counsel, where the Office of Special Counsel can decide to, has the authority and duty to investigate matters that involve prohibited personnel practices. This court said, at the very least, there's an obligation on the Office of Special Counsel to do what the statute required it to do. But beyond that, if it doesn't do that, right, mandamus might serve to require it to do what it's required to do procedurally. But beyond that, on the substance, there's no review.
And I'm not, I understand what the Ninth Circuit, I think, was assuming something. And out of caution, they said, no, none of it's reviewable, because they assumed that if someone could file a petition for reconsideration, at the end of that, that would mean review of the whole matter. I don't think it necessarily follows. I think they're separate questions. For example, you write a rule that says you have a right to petition for reconsideration. Someone comes in and says, we want you to reconsideration. You say, get out of here. We've got other things to do. Well, you know, you've trapped yourself because you wrote the regulation. Can't they say the least they had to do it, hear what we had to say?
So I would say it's still not in order, and that...
I understand your argument on that. Okay. But it's your rule, and you created a right.
That's right, and I would say that it still doesn't resolve into an order, but what it does allow it, perhaps, is a mandamus action to require us to do the very thing that we provided in the regulation, namely consider the reconsideration petition. But I certainly think that your guidance in the Chiron case suggests that we're now getting embroiled in the very kinds of things that detract from the actual investigations that we have to do. And so if you...
Well, is there no redress for someone if your investigation is careless and reckless and injures someone's reputation? What redress do they have?
Well, I can't accept the premise that it injures a reputation. I think the problem...
Well, hypothetically.
Okay.
You can imagine a case where it does. And what redress would have played out?
It's difficult for me to imagine, but assuming that, I would say there is no redress. We don't have an order. Mm-hmm. We haven't, again, I'm harping on the very definitions of order that this court has established in Mendoza versus Perez more recently, but Safe Extensions and so forth, where the court has said an order changes obligations, fixes legal rights, or has a legal consequence.
How did the report in Tozzi actually affect legal rights? So other agencies, state or federal, might or might not pay attention to our report, but nothing in the law obligated anybody to attach legal consequences to the report. It was just, here's the federal government's views. We think it causes cancer.
Right. I do think that the difference is there was the possibility, potentially, of other agencies, which is a little vaguer than in the no hazard hazard cases where the potential was great that other agencies would use FAA
determinations.
No, I'm not
talking about
Tozzi,
though. Because the potential, but do we know that no one else in the federal government attaches any consequence, not legal consequences, but does it takes things that then have a, in response to these reports, or do state governments attach any legal consequence, not as in a liability, like they can't under the statute, but just legal consequence? You know, we take it seriously, and legal things follow from it.
I'm aware of none. I asked the FAA and the NTSB those questions. They're aware of no other consequences that, in the vein that you're discussing, like the hazard, no hazard determinations, where some state agency might use or will use, in fact, the no hazard determination to grant a permit or not. None of that, as far as I know.
I'm just trying to figure out, because Tozzi just said, look, you know, it's going to be bad for, it's bad for business to have someone, the U.S. government, officially report, put on its website, that something we make has an ingredient that, in their determination, causes cancer. It's just bad for business. It hurts our pocketbook. And here, they seem to be saying, the U.S. government, with all of its authority and all of its the force of its voice, has gone on its website and said, Georgina Joshi killed five people. And that, as a father, as a parent, as executive of her estate and protecting her name, that hurts. It may not be a pocketbook injury, but that hurts. Why isn't that a standing injury?
So this court has said emotional injury, for one, is not sufficient for, well, we're into standing. But in terms of that very question, there isn't. Well, first let me say that on the NTSB website, if you go to the factual report and the probable cause determination, there is no name associated with either of those. As my colleague said, you have
it's
to
easy enough to figure out in the Internet of your own.
Well, that's the point. I think it's very important to note that, in fact, this is just a general probable cause consideration by the NTSB. It welcomes further evidence to reconsider whether the original probable cause determination is or is not appropriate or still valid. And it always, according to 49 CFR 845.51, keeps these matters open. So now I'm finally to the final order part of the order. To the extent that in this unique situation where probable cause determinations are not closed because the agency does want to perfect the information, after all, air safety is at stake, it doesn't close the investigation. It continues to be open. And I think that's a key reason, though not stated,
we've
why.
We've had good cases where, you know, FBI is investigating someone for anthrax, something like that, and they say, we think we have a suspect. Has anyone seen Mr. X? And then it turns out, and it's an ongoing investigation. They're not done. There's nothing remotely final about it. And then it turns out, of course, it wasn't Mr. X. And meanwhile, his reputation has been shattered because the federal government came out in a tentative statement and said, we think there's probable cause to believe that X caused a bad thing to happen.
I'm not sure exactly whether that would be APA review or NTSB, some sort of special statute.
It's an injury. I guess I'm going to go back to the start just with the standing.
Well,
isn't
I don't
that
think
an
there's
injury?
Any, as Judge Edwards said in the Chiron case, there's no injury traceable to probable cause determinations because all they're done for is to enable air safety to be improved. They're not done to settle any legal liabilities or any relationships amongst parties, whether out there and unknown or those that we know of who participated in the investigation. I think
if Georgina Joshi were still alive, and let's imagine this completely hypothetical, but you had a completely corrupted investigation driven by some aircraft company or parts company. And it turned, and she had all this evidence. It was completely corrupted. There was no basis. It wasn't even colorable or plausible to blame her for it. Would she have any injury from the fact that this report was still out there? Would she have any injury? And would she have any remedy?
So my answer is no. And her ability to present the evidence to the NTSB puts it out on the NTSB website. In effect, she can provide her, as was the case here, their own study and report saying what they think is
you put that on the website next to your own any private report that they
no
come
but
up
it's
with?
Available on the public docket. No, so it's not next to our report, mm-hmm. to be clear, but mm-hmm. it is on the public docket.
We're conflating the Tozzi type reputational injury, which was well pled. I'm not sure that reputational injury has been well pled here, but in any event, with the requirement of finality. You can have standing and still not be able to pursue a claim. And that happens all the time. Article III standing, in some senses, is hard. In some senses, is easy. I mean, the Supreme Court has said there are cases where you can have Article III standing, or you may not be in the zone of interest, you may not have finality, whatever. Your argument is whether or not there is Article III standing theoretically here, that they've made some showing on reputation. They have no final order to go after.
That's correct. And in addition, if I may, I see I'm over my time. If I may say as to the reputational injury seems to focus on Mr. Joshi, not Georgina, in his brief. He's talking about reputational injury to himself, and I think that's because under Indiana law, her reputation, unfortunately, has no injury to it now that she's dead.
See, the other thing that's coming is creeping in and creeping out in this case is the suggestion that you have these findings so that the agency can make reports or not that may be appropriate with respect to safety. Well, I think understanding the law, they have no standing to come in and insist that the agency is not doing its job well enough with respect to advising other government agencies. I just don't see how you get standing there. We say that you can't come in and compel the agency to do a better job of what they're doing.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is our basic position. that, in fact, but it's combined with the notion that there's no order here and no final
order. Is what you're strongly arguing.
That's correct.
Standing stuff is coming in and out.
And then because we don't think this is an order, I think we start our brief purposely with that and wove in the standing argument much later. In between, of course, we said on the APA issues, those are committed to agency discretion completely by the law and the regulations, so that, in fact, if you do find that there's some sort of review in this case, it wouldn't be under the APA, it would be under 49 U.S.C. 1153, then, in fact, using APA-type standards to review, there would be no way in which manageable standards for this court to judge what the NTSB has done. If there are no further questions, I'd ask the court to dismiss the petition for review as on the basis that there's no jurisdiction.
Thank you. Mr. Casey.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm struck by the fact that the NTSB is essentially arguing that its most important task has no consequence, which is essentially what they have to be doing in order to say that they're...
I don't think that's what they said. They said no legal consequences, and that's a term of art. Jury speeches don't work.
I understand, Your Honor. But what I'm trying to say is that they do have substantial consequences. But to get to his discussion of Chiron, this is in no way Chiron. In Chiron, we're essentially the anti-Chiron, Judge Edwards. In Chiron, the people that were seeking review were parties to the investigation and therefore had waived any kind of rights to information. We are expressly not parties to the investigation. In addition, they professed that their injury that they would suffer was that it would damage them in ongoing or future civil litigation. That's in no way what we're talking about here. So the issues that Chiron turned on have nothing to do with this case here. Going back to Gibson, Gibson really is an opinion that there's a reason why it hasn't been cited in 17 years. It ignores the presumption of reviewability of agency action. It says that it focuses on the question with regard to determinate consequences purely from the lens of a lack of admissibility in a civil jury trial. And that is not at all the only that's not where we are in any way. This is not going to be used in a civil jury trial. And as we've said, there are obligations that would have accrued had they done their job and come up with safety recommendations. And in addition, there are legal rights, for example, not to be accused of being the killer of five people. And the information that a adequate investigation would have resulted in, which would be safety recommendations for the airport that he still applies into.
Great. Thank you very much. We have your argument. The case is submitted.